How could I not be part of this? I mean, the energy in San Francisco was just incredible. And the opportunity to build something and to learn, and honestly, the impact opportunity.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. Fran Mayer is the entrepreneurial powerhouse behind Baby Quip, as seen on Shark Tank. But she is most famous for being a co-founder of Match.com. In this episode, Fran delves into the pivotal moment shaping her journey, including her decision to join the startup team at Match in its early stages and the launch of Baby Quip, a platform connecting traveling families with baby gear rental services. Fran highlights the transformative power of innovation in entrepreneurship, inspiring others to push boundaries and redefine industries. I started out by asking Fran, while she was growing up in those early days, did she have any idea that she would become this successful entrepreneur?
I don't know, Robert, and thank you for having me on the show. Appreciate it. I don't know that word entrepreneur was really in my vocabulary until later. My dad, though, was a business guy. He was a sales guy. He was in insurance. And he was a student of business. And even as a small child, I got that, hey, selling stuff, marketing stuff, giving people what they want, making some money was definitely something that I picked up from my dad. I remember I sold the most Girl Scout cookies. What can I tell you? I went to college thinking I was going to be an English major.
You went to college. Was it when you really came out of school and we'll go into Match.com and starting that business? And that was a time, I remember starting one of my first business at the time, where entrepreneurs were not looked up upon until around that time. But did you choose to go and study English because business wasn't even, you weren't thinking about it at that time as a woman?
Yeah, no, I went to Stanford, and Stanford has a great business school that I went to later. But as an undergrad, I just was hungry to learn, and I was a big reader, so that made sense. But during my undergraduate years and my senior year, I put together a group of students to run a yogurt shop on the campus, okay, a frozen yogurt shop, I should say, which was relatively new. This is,
yes,
I think, 83.
Oh, and you were ahead of your time in that one.
Oh, my God. It was called the Corner Pocket and had a bunch of employees. And that was really my first entrepreneurial effort. I remember, and to this day, every day, I check what were our sales. And I remember 2,000, 3,000, 5,000. The line is too long. What can we do to shorten the line? I am still excellent at dicing up strawberries.
It's amazing because it sounds from maybe seeing your father and seeing the business and getting excited about that. And then, of course, the yogurt shop. But Yogurt Shop 83. I don't recall yogurt shops even coming around till right around early 90s, mid 90s. You were way ahead of the game. How come did it not take off, or you ended up wanting to go into business school?
At that point, I was more focused. I had switched from an English major to basically a public policy major, but it was basically organizational theory and political science and statistics and economics, and all those things were much more interesting to me at that point. I did think about opening up a frozen yogurt shop back in Santa Fe. I knew exactly where I'd put it. But at that point, I think my ambitions were a little bit higher. And I went from there to consulting, which is a typical path for a Stanford grad, thinking I'd go to business school, did the consulting for a couple of years. And while I was consulting, there were other business school graduates. I was the undergraduate consultant, sort of the junior person, but there were more senior people. And we had a project with the city of Oakland. And one of the things I had to do was go interview people at Clorox, which was one of the only headquartered companies in Oakland.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
When I saw what brand management was and talked to the senior consultants about this model, this is what I immediately thought, oh, this is what I want to do. Because what I liked about brand management is it's not just the marketing, but it's the product development, it's the pricing, it's the packaging, it's the overall business. Does the business make sense? So I really went to business school very focused, honestly, on working at Clorox.
It's amazing to me because it's funny, and a lot of our listeners are actually probably a lot of brand managers. There's a lot of people who are in corporate America who want to become entrepreneurs. And my question for you is, how did you make that decision? Because going into a Clorox, especially at that time, people would stay 20, 30 years. I have friends that they're either there or they're in another brand management role or have climbed the ladder, whatever it might be. But to me, it seems so different from, yes, there's the same aspects of the product and exactly what you described with the yogurt store. But what was it that made you, I assume, not go to Clorox unless you did, but really? Yeah. And so tell me what happened, and then how did Match come about?
Yeah. So what happened is I got the summer internship at Clorox. That was a big win. They gave me an offer. I worked there from what would have been 89, after I graduated from business school, to about 93. It was a great postgraduate degree in marketing. Fabulous. And had two children while I was there. So that was good to get out of the way. And the big corporation had a little bit more support than I think any entrepreneurial thing would have. And I would have, I think, stayed, but I was with a brand that got sold. There was a little bit of a recession. So I found myself and then they decided to have layoffs. Honestly, they laid me off when I was a few months pregnant. That was crazy. And there were aspects of it, looking back, that it was very white male oriented for the most part. Women were doing well there. And I do have a lot of friends who stayed there. And they're doing great some 35 years later. I went to AAA here in Northern California. They had never had a marketing department. And I was the product manager of membership. And I only stayed a year, but that was a great year because Clorox focused a lot on mass media, and I did advertising campaigns and big promotional campaigns and things like that. Learned how to do the commercial. That was fantastic. AAA was all about direct marketing, and that turned out to be pretty important. So while I was at AAA, that was the first time I saw the internet. First time I saw AOL. And at the time, maybe you'll remember this, Robert, there was a book called The One-to-One Future. And
I'm surprised they don't, because I was so into the internet back, like the start of it. And
this was how you could reach your customers better via fax and audio text. So awesome, right? But I remember reading the book, and the idea was that there's going to be new tools. And the first edition of the book was built before there was the internet, was written before there was the internet. But I remember looking at the internet and thinking to myself, this is going to effing change everything. Mm-hmm. I looked at it. I knew it. I knew it in my bones. I went to my business school reunion and my five-year reunion. This is 1994. I saw my friend Gary Kremen, who was out there, crazy guy, always had a mile a minute kind of idea, very frenetic. She said, I'm starting this company called Electric Classifieds. I need somebody to run the online dating aspect, which is really just a proof of concept. What we really want to do is get classifieds on the internet.
Love it.
And I said, I'd love to learn more. And within a few weeks later, I dropped by the offices with Chinese food one night, pizza the other night. There was maybe four guys sitting around the table. And Gary, I think, thought that he needed somebody with a good marketing background. And everybody talks about engineers and entrepreneurship. Sales and marketing is just as important into success. It is just as good of a on-ramp into tech and startup. Made me a job offer. I said, look, my husband is not going to accept this. I can't really leave this good job with that. Of course, he upped it. I got some options. I'll be honest with you. Back then, I had no idea what those really were. Theoretically, I did, but I didn't really know. And I left this cushy corporate job to work in a basement off South Park in San Francisco, which was a little bit grimy at the time.
Yeah.
And I've never looked back.
That made you go and do this and leave that cushy world of having a job as a brand manager. What was it inside of you at that time that said, I'm going to take this risk? Because that was really just at the beginning. And I agree with you. I was the same way with the internet. And obviously it's happened. But still, what was it that made you say, you know what, I'm giving this a shot?
I just don't think I could have not done it. Should I have picked a different opportunity? Oh, a friend of mine from Clorox was early on at Yahoo. The people who left Clorox did pretty well too. But no, how could I not be part of this? The energy in San Francisco was just incredible. And the opportunity to build something and to learn. And honestly, the impact opportunity. Now, online dating, did I give it a lot of thought? At this point, I'm married, so I'm not like Gary. Gary started Match.com to get a date, but I really wanted to be part of this and wanted to do the right. And honestly, I think I had a risk profile at that point.
Yeah.
That was, what could I really lose?
Exactly. And it's funny, I just think back because I lived this and I was coming out of college and I had to have been, and I wish there was a way to check this, like one of the first 1,000 people on Match or whatever it might have been. And I thought, and I remember there was a little bit of, what, you're going online to date like my friends? And I'm like, hey, I had 2 dates a week. It was amazing. I was like, this is the greatest thing ever.
It's so funny. When we launched, we would get a lot of feedback like that. Like people would say, I was going to settle. And now I'm dating so much, I really could find the right person.
That's awesome.
That was pretty awesome. I'll tell you, my experience did really make a difference.
Yeah.
We really focused strategically on attracting women with the idea, and women were on the internet less than men at the time, but the idea was by doing that, we'd get more men. And the strategy of attracting women wasn't just marketing to women, but was really building the product in such a way that women would find it attractive. The 3 words that we had for our brand values were safe, anonymous, and fun. At the time, anonymity was important. So we really focused on that. And the fun part was really important too. We hired and did things to get across in our PR and other things that you should meet in public when you meet in person, all of this. So a couple of fun facts that people probably wouldn't realize that when we launched in May of 1994, we had 5 matching questions. And most of them had to do with how you look. And I've spoken to tons of people over the years who've done online dating. And I say, how many of you have ever had to put in your weight in pounds? And nobody raises their hand. And I say, that's because of me. I knew that if we were trying to go after women, We weren't going to ask the weight question. We were going to ask body type instead.
Well, they were smart to bring a woman on the founding team. And that was another reason, aside from just even at that time. But it's very interesting. Can you imagine that?
Yeah. And another thing, and this really reflects my experience at AAA, is that the initial idea was to charge by contact. Okay. And honestly, we didn't really have the technology back then to do that. But nonetheless, I had just come from membership and I had seen how AAA membership is so powerful. And so I was a proponent of the membership business model, which was the best business model you could have done right then. And it's still mostly the business model. Apps have gone on to free download, then charging for upgrades. But I knew that membership would make the women especially feel good. As soon as we turned on pricing in the membership model, which I think back then was $3.99 a month, the percentage of women went up dramatically. You could just see it. So it was a hell of a lot of fun. Unfortunately, it was really part of Electric Classifieds. And Gary was kicked out within a year by the board. Classifieds, or I should say online dating, was still considered rather sleazy. The money and the board members were all about us getting newspapers to put the classifieds on our platform, a white label solution. And Match got shunted. Nonetheless, we were number one. I was able to demonstrate that all of our advertising money, believe it or not, paid back. Okay, so I had to prove that our advertising money paid back early on in what would become basically a social network. Nonetheless, we were it. They sold it in 1998 for less than $8 million.
Wow.
I got a little bit of money, basically a couple $100,000 to help with the sale and the transition. Looking back, and shortly thereafter, I knew I probably should have put together the investment group and bought it. But honestly, I was so beaten down at that point.
Yeah.
So exhausted, had two small children. My now ex-husband was not real supportive. And I let it go. And I let the whole online dating thing go. I just, who knows?
It's amazing because interviewed others. One person comes to mind. Her and her husband started FanDuel, and the big gaming that's turned into $10 billion business, and had a similar situation, not the same exact story. They're no longer involved. Well, I always just thought I gave her so much credit. Like, she picked herself off the mat, started another business. For you at that time, and having the two little kids and being on your own, like, how did you go from there and maintain your love and passion for business, entrepreneurship? How'd you pick yourself off the mat?
Yeah, I had a lot of opportunities. I took a job as CMO at women.com. I was still very much dedicated to women success. It was more of a lifestyle website. Believe it or not, there were really only two big websites aimed at women's content. I know that's hard to believe.
Yes.
But it was funded and a little bit more mature of a company. Had a lot of fun dealing that. I remember I got us to a top 25 website. We IPO'd in late 99, but I have to tell you, that wasn't the best timing.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. In the end, I left there in 99 and took a job with BlueLight.com. And this was Kmart and SoftBank.
Yeah.
And the idea was to build the fastest growing free internet and get people into Kmart. That was fun. It was a big vision. I had $100 million marketing budget.
Oh my gosh. And I would imagine what I could do with that, but it's amazing.
Yeah. So in the end, the dot-com bust happened, and it happened hard. And so at that point, I left BlueLight.com. I took about a year off. and just regrouped. And no, I was still in it. I was not looking to go to a big company. And honestly, I probably would have done fine because that experience was really good. But I ended up going to TrustArt, what's now called TrustArt, was called Trustee, internet privacy company. They're best known for their certification of privacy policies, and privacy continues and was then a very big issue. And I thought I'd be there for a year or two, turn it around. It was actually a nonprofit.
Wow.
Well, but this was the dot-com bust.
Yes. I mean,
we're talking mid-2001, and things were really slow. It was definitely a nadir for investment in startups and so on. I was able to turn it around and grow it and expand it. Intellectually, it was interesting to me, the issues around privacy. I was the boss, so I could run my own schedule. At this point, my kids are in those elementary years.
Yeah, it was so important
to be around a little bit more. But in 2005, I started a strategic planning process. And basically, I was trying to convince a board of mostly privacy lawyers that we couldn't continue to be a not-for-profit. We needed the capital to build a real business. We needed technology. We needed technology. And we needed to raise some money. And I gave them an ultimatum. Let me raise some money or I have to leave, which, you know, I don't like to do. But sometimes you have to do it. And they didn't believe I'd raise the money. And in the end, I had two really good venture capital firms who both wanted to invest, and they had to convince the nonprofit board. And can you believe that? And
nonprofit, yes, I definitely can.
And I was able to raise $10 million from Excel, which, for, you know, great firm. Teresa Gap joined the board as well as one of her colleagues. And we dissolved the not-for-profit, which was a complicated thing to do, really taught me a lot about governance. And, but let me tell you the date. It was July 2008. We had no idea going into, you know, it was nuts. I thought, now I have money, I can grow this thing. And let me tell you, my doctor will say genetics trumps all, recessions trump all.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors.
There's more to being a successful entrepreneur than just good business practices. What is it about an entrepreneur's childhood that helped them fuel their entrepreneurial spirit? What are entrepreneurs doing to cultivate this spirit in their own children and build a legacy beyond their business? Tune in each month to the Road to Why podcast by the Northern Trust Institute, where host Eric Chapaya dives deeper with leading entrepreneurs on these topics and more. Find the Road to Why where you listen to your favorite podcasts.
And we're back.
Yeah, it's really amazing because a lot of your story, it's Match.com and success you've had. I want to get into, of course, Baby Quip because this is your baby, I would say. But it's amazing how you've lived this life where you saw like the boom of the internet, but then right prior you saw the downfall, right, in 99. And then now you went into this and then all of a sudden everything's set and the financial crisis hits. It's hard enough to build a business just in, I couldn't say normal times, but average times. You really had to pick yourself off the mat a lot of times here.
Yeah, no kidding. And I will tell you, timing also trumps all, right?
Oh, true.
So what happened is about a year later, and partially I did the female thing and said, I'm not sure if I want to stay on another 10 years. That was stupid. But I have to tell you, raising that money for a trustee was a do-over. This time I raised the money, I put together the investment group, I got my share of the company, and that turned out to be a very pivotal event for me. That certainly has paid out. TrustArt is still a private company, but over the years, I've been able to sell some of my shares, and I expect. I put in the win column for sure.
Oh, right, no doubt about it.
They brought in a different CEO, good guy. In the end, I thought it was the right decision. And I left. I stayed around. I was very pivotal to its continued growth. I stayed around to about 2012. In 2011, got divorced, moved to San Francisco, and I'm getting to the Baby Quip story. Moved from Alameda, where I raised my kids, to, across the bay back to San Francisco, literally up the street from Airbnb. Had no idea what Airbnb was.
What the hell were they doing at that point?
It was in the air, right? And I bought this three-story house. Top story had two bedrooms. And on a lark, I thought, I'm going to rent these bedrooms, see what it's like. Everybody's talking about this. Boom. Had business all the time. Was making real good money. Was thinking to myself, why don't I pick up a board seat and do some consulting? I don't need to go back and do a real job. But of course, I'm an entrepreneur. And I'm thinking, wow, this new way people are traveling and this new way people are working, this whole gig economy thing was just exploding. And here's where being in San Francisco makes a difference, right? We're seeing all of this before anybody else.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty happy with the whole thing, right? But I'm advising some startup founders. And of course, the whole app world is, and mobile is blowing up as well. And I'm like, okay, I'm getting a little bit itchy. Maybe I need to get back into it. And in early 2016, I met a gal who happened to be from Santa Fe, my hometown, who had started a baby gear rental platform. And we had our first meeting. She came out to Silicon Valley to a pre-accelerator that I was advising. In our first meeting, she gave me the pitch. I said, I think I should be your CEO. I just did that.
I love how when I think about your story and that it seems there's stories of these athletes that get, they don't get drafted in the first couple rounds, and then they have this chip on their shoulder for their careers, and then they perform, they become Hall of Famers. It seems to me like that initial mistake, it was a learning experience, but the fact that you didn't put together your own investment group. And sometimes it's timing and it's what you knew at the time.
Oh, at the time, it was also confidence.
So interesting. So it's confidence. So it just shows to me, it seems to me, from what you've told me up to this point, at that point, you just said, I'm not going to let that happen again.
And then during this stage, and this is about early 2016, I was like, I've got another one in me. And a friend of mine said something to me like, you've got too much to give. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I'm working with a lot of nonprofits as a board member,
Sure. And
which is great. I'm glad I did that. But I was too young. I was still in my 50s. I'm still too young to hang it up. So I remember starting Baby Quip and honestly thinking, if it doesn't work, at least it'll be fun for a while. I'll learn something and it's no big deal. Of course, I ended up putting a lot of my own money into it. So it was turned out to be a pretty big deal. But as I looked at the opportunity, there was really nobody doing this at scale. Like Batch, I knew trust and safety would be really critical to success. Being a parent myself, I knew that you're not going to want to go to Craigslist to rent baby gear. Traveling was happening. I knew as an Airbnb host, that I didn't want to buy that gear, and I didn't know how to open up these new fangled strollers and things like that. So I knew that whole segment was going to go crazy for it. And we launched it in May of 2016 with Carrie, the gal from New Mexico, started it. She left in 2017. Startups aren't for everyone, and she's doing fine. Still owns a nice portion. In 2017, my son, who had been working at Accenture in development for 5 years, I knew he was ready to make a change. And I said, Carrie left. And before I could practically say the sentence, he said, oh, I'm in.
Oh, wow. So going with your mom, I got to give Nats. He was sold on the idea. And we can get into that. But so he came on board.
Both my kids are software engineers.
Oh, Okay, good.
So, yeah, that was that kind of made it extra special for me, though. Oh. You know, yeah, I'm on board. And pretty much from the beginning, Robert, we would put what we call quality suppliers. These are the moms mostly who own the baby gear in a market, turn them on, and there was business.
Yeah.
It was called Baby Airs. We changed the name to Baby Quip in 2018, and that was a big deal.
How can you change the name?
Baby Airs got the concept, concierge, but boy, people cannot spell it. A lot of people cannot pronounce it. It was just not going to scale.
And half the world probably couldn't even figure it out what the combination was.
Right. So Baby Quip. And also that whole idea of equipment and the quip part of equipment gives us some opportunity to grow into some other categories as well.
Yeah, it's really funny because being an entrepreneur myself, and I had sold my business to a creative artist agency, the last one, and then was coming out and thinking what I'm going to do. And I ended up getting into podcasting through this podcast. And now we create technology for podcasting. But it was funny. One of the ideas I had when I was figuring out a new business was actually doing, I was going on a hike, and I'm not like a hiker, and I was like, there's got to be like, and then I went to Patagonia or Paragon here in New York City, and it was like $500 to buy like a tent and something, and I was like, how about
I'm thinking about it.
I was like, this was like 4 or 5 years ago. And I was like, that could be a good business.
Yeah. No, we're thinking about it.
Maybe.
And I took a page from Gary Kremen and bought a bunch of URLs. So
that is smart. Yeah. That is a great idea. So tell me now, and I see it, if your two sons, they're engineers, it seems to me you do everything, but you're a marketer. You're like you. And I love how you've taken what you've learned over the years and you keep applying it to these new businesses. Like it's never changed, like the safety factor, the, you know, things that are important. And especially having kids myself, I would have loved this service because I couldn't figure out every time how to put, I don't know, I couldn't even put like the stroller in like the back seat, whatever, the baby seat. It just, it was a mess. This is a great idea. But my question is, where are you today with the business? Are your sons still involved? Tell us how.
I only have one son that's involved.
I'm sorry, your son.
My love. But
he does the job of two people, though.
Yeah, he's CTO. We all do multiple hats. And we hear that, Robert, from everybody. Where were you?
Exactly.
So what's great, and just like Match, we're solving an important problem. And on the surface, it doesn't sound that important. But honestly, parents say all the time to us that we save the vacation. And today's parents are, there was a story yesterday where some mom went to a hotel. They said they had a crib. What they really had was a pack and play. The baby didn't sleep. Nobody's having a good vacation. And Baby Quip comes to the rescue. A lot of fun with that. Business is doing great. Highlights. Get this, Joe and I were on Shark Tank. March 6th, 2020.
Oh my gosh.
I had a party at my house, believe it or not, but the next week everything went down. This time I would say my timing looks like it's good. I'm knocking on the wood, okay? Because who knows? But we had raised some money prior to 2020 and got government help. Whoever expected that through the pandemic? So, you know, still a very small team, shrunk it a little, cut back on spending, got through the pandemic, starting 2021, probably in February, mostly in Florida, boom, right? 2021 was something like twice 2019. We'll skip 2020. 2022 was double 2021. This year, we're close to, probably will be over $16 million in overall revenue.
Right.
Net revenue, close to $5 million. And I closed, as of today, about $3 million on an up-round financing.
Good for you. People are listening to you now because you are ahead of the game on all of these ideas. It's just, to me, it's incredible thinking back you knew what was happening, what was going to happen internet-wise, dating. And you just said, this is, for me, genius just in terms of the idea. And it hurts because I think back to those vacations where, like you just said, talked about the pack and play. And I remember going one time down to Florida from New York, and we were in this hotel room, and they told us there was going to be this, and it's this, my kid was like up all night. It just ruined the entire vacation. And I'm thinking to myself, when you're telling me this story, oh, now they're teenagers and like they run away from me, which is great. But anyway, but it seems like even regardless of the issues that have happened, the economy, the going through the ups and downs of Silicon Valley, the finance, like you seem to find a way, Fran. You pick yourself up.
Oh my God, I've been called so many words. Persevering, resilient, agile, competent. I it's funny, I get this compliment of being very competent.
I'd like someone to call me competent. I would be okay.
I know.
You're competent.
Generic.
Yeah.
I want all the stuff that they give guys. Somebody wrote a book about Gary Kremen and Match.com. And you know how they refer to me in the book? I'll tell you. A brash young mother of two.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, oh, come on, in this day and age.
And you don't even come as brash. You come across as smart. And it is.
I might have been a little brashy then. But they would call a guy hard-charging, aggressive. And they wouldn't mention his kids. And
it was a different time, different world. I went through it with my wife, who, she was a top salesperson selling outdoor advertising. And we had our little ones back in 2000, I don't know, 7, 8, around there. And just, she had to leave. She wanted to feed them. She couldn't even feed them at work. She had to run home. She finally just left. And then when she went back a couple years later, these guys that were complete idiots that she was a thousand steps ahead of were her boss. When it was hard and people, and I want to ask you in the time we have left, just seeing female entrepreneurs now and seeing what's going on, seeing what we saw with Me Too, has much changed when you look at it now in 2023 from, let's say...
No, I have a long look because I can look back to the Match.com days, and it turns out electric classifieds never succeeded. Went through multiple CEOs. Looking back on that, if I had the confidence and had I been a guy, I probably could have, first of all, raised that money, would have raised it well. Somebody would have told me, why don't you do it? Nobody told me that. Women.com had great traffic and so on. Still, financing was difficult. Now, I've been able to do it, but honestly, part of me is grateful, and I do practice gratitude for everything that I have. That being said, I probably could have done a lot more, okay?
Yeah.
Had I been a guy. When you look at the entrepreneurial funding, that number of 2%, so that women only get 2% of venture capital funding, that there's no explanation for it other than incredible bias.
Yeah.
There's just no way that women have only 2% of the good ideas. Even if the number was 20%, you would have to call it extreme bias.
It's guys. It just reminds me, I had interviewed actually the first, this is probably about my 200 plus episode. The first episode I did was with the woman who started Rent a Runway.
And, oh, right.
And she had to go into this group of VCs, all guys. And I just remember this from, I remember little things. And she was like, I was trying to, these guys didn't understand what it was like to open a box and see new clothing that how it would make me feel. And hundreds of VCs passed. And it's amazing to me too, because I think back to you at Match and thinking like, there's two parts of the equation here. But that time with Match.com, there's a man, there's a woman. Of course you want a woman. And the most important thing is the woman, because as you said, once the women are on, and wouldn't you want a woman's advice? And it's just amazing to me that it still seems like there's those issues, because people, if you're not a female, you can't see it or you can't understand it. So it was, it's very interesting that you really have gone through that. And I want to ask you before we end, if you could go back and give yourself advice, your younger self, starting out, and from where you are sitting today, what would that advice be? And what would you tell your younger self at that point, going back to the early 90s?
Yeah. And Robert, I do a lot of talks to female entrepreneurs and have advised them a bunch of them. And really the one word that comes again and again is be more confident. Your market, the way a lot of female entrepreneurs come to it after spending years in corporations, they understand their segment or their function. They know what the opportunity is, and they got to go after it with a lot more confidence.
I love that.
Had I had that, I probably would have taken the Match.com thing at least a year after we sold it for $7 million. It sold for $80
million. Yeah, I don't even want to know what it would sell.
Oh, yeah. It's a billion-dollar company.
Yeah. It just shows, though, I always wondered personally if I talk about FanDuel, the person, and other instances where situations like this happen, and then VCs or others took the business, and then, or we had the guy from started Waze and they sold very early. And I always just thought how hard that would be to then go pick myself off the mat. But the greatest thing about you is that you keep going. And then what I love is you said you met this gal from New Mexico and you jump back in and you said you want to enjoy yourself. And at the end of the day, now coming up, this, I'm on my third business now. It's really about, yes, I want to do some great things and I love if it's mission driven, but also it's about enjoying the moment, which has always been, and as an entrepreneur and probably all these entrepreneurs listening, it's so hard because it's so day to day. Like you said, you're looking at the sale and what, and it's a, being an entrepreneur, it's a difficult, but it seems like you
come on.
I will not trade it for anything in the world and working for anyone. But my problem is my personality is, even when we're doing well, is as an entrepreneur is thinking about what the pitfalls are going to be. I have to get better at least being 50-50.
Oh, I'm a lot more mellow than I used to be.
That's cool. Because you need...
And I'm trying to enjoy it. And here, I'd say years of experience really... Yeah. I'm pretty good at hiring people. I'm pretty good at managing them. I wear a lot of hats at Baby Quip. I pretty much know how to wear those hats. And so that all feels good. But I can't take it for granted. We're working really hard about it. I get inspiration every day from our quality providers who are helping the families.
Yeah.
And we're teaching them how to be good entrepreneurs. So that gives me a lot of it's good impact. It makes me feel good.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to have some fun. I think 2024 is going to be very pivotal for us. Got a little bit of money, need to figure out how to spend it just right. Mm. But I'm getting ready for the holidays.
Yeah. You know what? That's right. Enjoy. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been an inspiration talking to you. I love just that. As you said, confidence and picking yourself up and continue to go and getting to the stage where you are, where trying to have a little fun and enjoy it. And I wish you much more success and I'm sure you'll have it. And again, thanks for coming on, friend.
Thank you, Robert. It's a lot of fun for me.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning. And you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com. or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman. That's R-O-B-E-R-T-T-U-C-H-M-A-N. Or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business. Or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.